All glories assemble devotees. All glories assemble devotees. All glories assemble devotees. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So today we're reading from 2nd Canto, Chapter 6, Purusha Shukta Confirmed, Verse 36. Natosmyaham tat charanam samiyusham. Bhavachchiram swaschayanam sumangalam. Yoyatma maya bibhavas. Smaparyagat Yatanava swantam atapare kuta. Natosmyaham tat charanam samyusham. Vavachiram swaschayanam sumangalam. Yoyatma maya bhivavam smaparyagad. Yatana baswantam atapare kuta. Natosmyam tatcharanam samyusham. Vavachiram swaschayanam sumangalam. Yoyatma maya bhivavam samayagad. Yatana basvantam atapare kuta. Natosmyam tatcharanam samyusham. Vavachiram swaschayanam sumangalam. Yoyatma maya bhivavam smaparyagad. Yatana basvantam atapare kuta. Any ladies? Okay, students? Natosmyaham tat charanam samyusham. Vavachiram swaschayanam sumangalam. Yoyatma maya bhivavam smaparyagad. Yatana basvantam atapare kuta. Natosmyaham tat charanam samyusham. Vavachiram swaschayanam sumangalam. Yoyatma maya bhivavam smaparyagad. Yatana basvantam atapare kuta. Natosmyaham tat charanam samyusham. Vavachiram swaschayanam sumangalam. Yoyatma maya bhivavam smaparyagad. Yatana basvantam atapare kuta. Very nice. It wasn't that easy of a verse to chant. You did a wonderful job. Okay, Nata, let me offer my obeisances. Asmi, am. Aham, I. Tat, the Lord's. Charanam, feet. Samyusham, of the surrendered soul. Bhavachidam, that which stops repetition of birth and death. Swastiyanam, perception of all happiness. Sumangalam, all auspicious. Ya, one who. He, exactly. Atmamaya, personal energies. Vibhavam, potency. Sma, certainly. Paryagat, cannot estimate. Yata, as much as. Naba, the sky. Swantam, its own limit. Ata, therefore. Apare, others. Kuta, how. Translation by Srila Prabhupada. Therefore, it is best for me to surrender unto his feet, which alone can deliver one from the miseries of repeated birth and death. Such surrender is all auspicious and allows one to perceive all happiness. Even the sky cannot estimate the limits of its own expansion. So what can others do when the Lord himself is unable to estimate his own limits? Okay, so let's repeat. Therefore, it is best for me to surrender unto his feet, which alone can deliver one from the miseries of repeated birth and death. Such surrender is all auspicious and allows one to perceive all happiness. Even the sky cannot estimate the limits of its own expansion. So what can others do when the Lord himself is unable to estimate his own limits? Okay, so I'm going to read just a little bit of the purport, and then I'll just take points from it because it's quite long, and I don't want to lose anybody if possible. Lord Brahma, the greatest of all learned living beings, the greatest sacrificer, the greatest observer of the austere life, and the greatest self-realized mystic, advises us as the supreme spiritual master of all living beings that one should simply surrender unto the lotus feet of the Lord in order to achieve all success, even up to the limit of being liberated from the miseries of material life and being endowed with all auspicious spiritual existence. Lord Brahma is known as the Pitamaha, or the Father's Father. A young man consults his experienced father about discharging his duties, so the father is naturally a good advisor. But Lord Brahma is the father of all fathers. He is the father of Manu, who is the father of mankind all over the universal planets. Therefore, the men of this insignificant planet should kindly accept the instruction of Brahmaji, and would do well to surrender unto the lotus feet of the Lord, rather than try to estimate the length and breadth of the Lord's potencies, whose potencies are immeasurable. Mangina Tamaranditya Gana Gana Salakaya Chakshara Militanyena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. So, in this chapter, it's come that Narada has some questions for Pitamaha, for the father of all fathers. And Lord Brahma, he created the whole material world. And so much sacrifice, so many austerities, so much penance. And Narada, it thinks, because he did all these magnificent things, he thinks that Lord Brahma must be the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He's pretty sure that he is. But at the same time, sometimes he sees Lord Brahma like worshiping, and he's thinking, well, who's he worshiping? I mean, how is he able, who did he perform all these sacrifices and penances for? So he inquires from him, you know, Lord Brahma, are you the Supreme Personality of Godhead? And Lord Brahma says, no, I'm not. You know, it's Krishna. And there's a verse in Bhagavad Gita, it goes, Bhoktaram Yajnatapasam Sarvaloka Maheshwaram Surhidam Sarvabhutanam Nyatyamam Shantamrichati. It says, Krishna, that he's the goal of all austerities and all penances and all sacrifices. And he's the master of all planets and all demigods. And most important of all, he's the friend of all living entities, the friend of everyone. So he explains all this to Narada, his son. And so he also explains how important it is for us to be able to surrender. So when you talk about surrender, you usually think of maybe like a war, and then somebody holds up the white flag and they wave it, you know, we surrender, we don't want to fight anymore. So, you know, we kind of have a war also, you know, a daily war. Can anyone say what that might be, what we might be struggling against? Anybody know what that could be? Yes? Maya, that's right. Right, and she shows herself in all different ways, like she shows herself like the three modes of material nature, you know, goodness, passion, ignorance. So sometimes we may be affected by the mode of ignorance, and we're just kind of angry and mad and want to sleep, and we don't want to talk to anybody, and And other times, mode of passion might be there. So we have a lot of energy. There's a lot of things we want to do. We might clean up our room. We might help our mom. Mode of goodness, you know, sometimes that appears, and maybe you're chanting and you're just feeling really good about everything. Maybe you compose a poem or you write an essay. But we don't have so much control over these modes of material nature unless what? What can we do to try to keep ourselves? It's actually sattva-guna, so that's it's above the three modes. It's above goodness, passion, ignorance. What can we do to keep ourselves up? Yes? Chant Hare Krishna, that's right. Wow, good for you. Yeah, when we chant, it helps us to rise above the modes because, you know, what is our ultimate goal by chanting? You know what? Yes.
Going back to Godhead.
That's right, going back to Godhead. And there's a big difference between Goloka Vrindavan and the material world. What are some of the difference? Like, what are some of the things that we don't like about the material world? Yes.
Work.
Okay. That is actually such an honest, good answer. Because in the material world, everybody has to work, right? And you don't always, even, you know, you got to do your homework, and you got to go to school, you got to get up. And so yeah, work. What else? What we don't like, yes? Repeated birth and death. What a great answer. Yeah, because in this planet where we're affected by time, you know? So who wants to get old? Raise your hand. Maybe a little older, right? But you don't really want to be. Good for you. You might want to be a little older, but then getting really old, then it's hard because you. Yes.
Good point.
But everyone doesn't know that, you know? So that's our job, right? We try to educate people because in the material world, you're affected by time. You're affected by the three modes of material nature. 1 second, okay, I'll get to you. Thank you. And, you know, you don't want to be born again. You don't want to have to die. You don't want to have to do all that. And in the material world, all that happens. And you get sick. Who likes to get sick? Raise your hand. Okay, we've got one person who likes to get sick. A few people. Maybe you get to stay home from school and your mom brings you tea. And okay, I get it. So, you know, so many things in this world that we wish could be different. You know, we wish could be different, but it's mundane. It's very temporary, right, this world. But in the spiritual world, everything is dazzling. It's beautiful. It's eternal. You know, it's exciting. It's vibrant. You know, nobody dies. Everyone's very beautiful. And a lot of things are made from Chintamani stone, you know, beautiful colors. And there's people have different complexions. Like one complexion is a coral cat's eye, a complexion, or like a lotus flower. So there's so much beauty there. And the big difference between the material world and the spiritual world is that the material world is temporary. And the spiritual world is eternal, so that's a good reason. Who had their hand raised over here? Do they still want to? Yes, honey.
Also, what I don't like is like the kind of trees thing.
Yes, good point. That's very disturbing, isn't it? It makes you not even want to hear the news when you hear about the war and all of that. Yes. That everything's temporary. Like, you just get used to being like a little kid, and pretty soon you're an adolescent, and you got to get used to a new body, and then pretty soon you're in your 20s, or pretty soon so all those, a lot of changes, you know. But what stays constant, the thing we can also always take shelter of, is Krishna in our heart, who's our best friend, you know. And so Lord Brahma says we should surrender to Krishna. So what do you think that means? We talked a little bit about it, surrender. And there's 6 symptoms of surrender too. Like one of the symptoms from Hari Bhakti Vilas that Sanatana Goswami talks about is that humility. We should have some humility, okay? That helps in our surrender, that we listen to people who we know. We have respect for people who know a lot, like our acharyas, like our spiritual master, right? He can help us come closer to Krishna. Without the spiritual master, we actually can't make any advancement. And also, it says that Krishna, we should understand that atmanivedanam, that everything we have belongs to Krishna. There's a verse in Shishupanishad, Ishavasyam idam sarvam yakin cha jagatam jagat tena chaktena bunchitaha magritha krishna swidanam, that everything animate and inanimate belongs to the Lord. Knowing that, one should only take what's necessary for himself as his quota, understanding to whom it belongs. So just think, if in this world everyone just took what they needed, instead of some people have $40 billion in the bank and they hardly know what to do with it anyway, and then somebody else, they just have a little tiny bit, you know. So everything belongs to Krishna. And then also we understand that Krishna, he's our Lord and our Master, and he's also our protector. Who can think of a time of a character in Srimad Bhagavatam, a personality, who felt completely protected by the Lord, no matter what? Yes. Arjuna, that's a good one. Yes, definitely. Yes. And who else?
Prahlad.
I was thinking of Prahlad, yes, right? So many things happened to him, but he always had faith that Krishna was going to protect him. So that's also an important one. And then another symptom of surrender is that we accept things that are favorable for devotional service, and we reject things that are unfavorable. So what are some of the things that are favorable for devotional service? Yes. Good. Fasting on Ekadashi. That's right. Sometimes they say even doing the little things. Yes.
Association of devotees.
Association of devotees. So important. Can't be overestimated. That kind of... And the opposite of that, of course, you know, things that we don't want is association of non-devotees where we might have a bad influence, right? So thank you for that. Yes. Japa. Yes. That really keeps us steady, doesn't it? Keeps us in good association. Yes.
Yay!
Eating Mahaprasadam. Because, you know, and that's so easy, right? Well, it's not that easy. Sometimes when you go to eat Mahaprasadam, it's all gone, right? But anyway, eating, at least eating prasadam is very helpful. Yes. That's right. Even if we read one verse a day, just one verse a day, like just coming to Bhagavatam class, that will give us something to think about all day. That will give us some inner strength. We'll be able to remember what Krishna says, how Krishna and how Lord Brahma is asking us to surrender to Krishna. Yes, what were you going to say?
Ashman.
What? Ashman. Ashman, for sure. We do ashman to purify ourselves, then we do worship, right? Yes.
Worshipping Krishna.
Yes. Even though, does Krishna need our worship? He doesn't really need it, but what does he love about? What does he love about it? Yes.
He loves when you take care of other devotees.
Yes. And what were you going to say?
Kirtan.
Kirtan. Hooray, it's just coming up, isn't it? And it's amazing. All day long, devotees are chanting. Yes. What? Cooking prasadam for Krishna. Yes. Do you ever do that with your mom? Do you help? Yeah, that's wonderful. Because Krishna, you know, Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, he says, Patram Pushpam Phalam Toyam Yomai Bhakta Prayachtati. Some of you know this. Tadaham Bhakti Papritam Ashtami Prayatatmanaha. So he says, a leaf, a flower, fruit, or water, that he'll accept it. If it has what?
If
it has Tulsi, that's right. Yes. Love and devotion. That's the main ingredient. Does Krishna really need us to give him an apple or to make? He doesn't really need it, but he needs the love and devotion. You know, he's trying to bring us back closer to him. Yes. What, honey?
Dressing the deities.
Yes, you have deities at your house? Yeah, and maybe you help your mom and dad dress, or maybe even do it yourself if you have little Gopal, you know, and you do it all yourself. So those are all things that are helping us to surrender to Krishna, to come closer and closer to Krishna's lotus feet. Yes. Come to the temple. That's right. And it's so wonderful to see you all here on Wednesdays. I know some of you come other days as well, maybe in the evening, or you come for Sunday feast. And it's amazing because in the Nectar Devotion, Srila Rupa Goswami's Nectar Devotion, he explains that everything in this world is based on love. Right? It's based on love. Like when you're a little baby, and then you, who do you love when you're a little baby? Yeah, your mom and dad, right? First your mom, pretty much. And then your dad. You get a little older, and then you might start loving your brother and your sister. And then you get a little older, and you start going to school, and who might you love then?
Your teachers.
Your teachers, that's right. You might love your teachers. These teachers are very lovable, too. And your friends, right? You have best friend, or yeah, you've got a lot of friends that you care about. But then as you get a little older, then you might start to love, yes, your friends. Yeah, you love your friends. Yes,
your grandparents.
Sure, your grandparents and your society. Just like as a devotee, you know, we try to respect everyone here in our community. So you might want to serve the community, just like we have a program called Devotee Care. We want to make sure that all the devotees in the community are cared for. And then when you get a little older than that, you might want to serve and care for your whole nation, your whole country. Yes?
Your dead uncle?
And your uncles, too, and your aunts, definitely. And then you might be just like Srila Prabhupada. He cared so much about not just his community or nation. He cared about all the living entities in the entire universe. How many species of living entities are there? Does anybody know how many? You know? What? More than man, but there is a certain number of species. Who said that? Okay, say it louder.
8,400,000.
Right, 8,400,000 species. And so, like Srila Prabhupada and the Acharyas, they cared about everybody. They didn't just care about the human beings. They also cared about the cows and the animals in general. They're like, why should you have a slaughterhouse and slaughter a bunch of animals? You know what Prabhupada said? Because somebody was mentioning how they hate about war. Prabhupada said, as long as there's cow killing, there'll always be war. Because when you do that, it brings out the worst in people. You know, it'll make them feel horrible, you know? So the devotees, the acharyas, they're trying to teach people how to be more magnanimous, right? Just like on Saturday, some of the devotees are going out and they're preaching. The scientists, they may say, oh, you know, they may be atheistic, right? Although they're theistic scientists, we have the Bhaktivedanta Institute where there are scientists who are devotees and they prove about how God is important. But a lot of scientists, they don't see that. And they try to tell us, like, well, there's no life on the moon. But because they went to the moon, they didn't see life. But what did Prabhupada say about that, about life on the moon? Yes. Okay, and he said that, thank you, he said that, there's life on the moon, but they don't have the eyes to see it. Okay? Just like, you know, sometimes when Prahlad was trying to preach to his friends, right, about Krishna consciousness, Prahlad's friends said, oh, Prahlad, we're only 5 years old. You know, we'll be Krishna conscious when we get older. We don't want to do it now. We want to play now. But what did Prahlad say? Or what's the danger with thinking like that? Yes. Yeah, and we never know, right? We never know, yes.
Start worshiping now, it'll be easier to start worshiping.
Good point. The sooner the better, right? And the more bhakti points we can get, and the more love and devotion, because it starts with love and devotion, and then it grows. Now, I have a poem that I brought. This is a poem by, his name is Jamadagni. He wrote a whole book of poems, and this is about a Dr. Frog who lived in a well. Does anybody ever hear about that poem? Okay, all right, so I'm going to read it. And I'm going to try to do it a little bit with some expression. So, Dr. Frog was a great professor, a genuine PhD, who lived in a pond in a shallow well, just as happy as he could be. He measured the sides to the top of the section that he could see, and then wrote books on the universe by thinking inductively. So this is kind of silly, right? Because for frogs to measure, but there's a point to it. There's nothing beyond our inspection, he would say with finality. It's conclusive truth. We accept a priori in relativity. But then came that fateful day when a frog who had been in the sea descended within their tiny pool and spoke with great subtlety. I've come from the shore of the ocean in a land of infinity. The water there is inconceivably deep and exists for eternity. What? What's that you say? Said the scholar. I doubt your veracity. You say that this place is as big as my well? Is it one time or two times or three? And croaking, you know how frogs have an air sac right here? And croaking, he puffed up his air sac in proportionate quantity, and he kept on inflating it bigger and bigger, expanding it arrogantly. Is it two times or 100? He said in anxiety, trying to puff, puff. Two times, 100 times? Only moments before his bubble burst, and he passed on immediately. So the point of this story is simple. The professor's mentality could not understand what was outside the well, and he gave up his PhD. Yes, Dr. Frog was a brilliant scholar, a little like you and me, who didn't believe anything was real except what he could see. So that's how a lot of people are. They say, well, I can't see Krishna. But actually, we know that three young boys, Narada Muni and Prahlad and Dhruva, who were very, very young, they all were able to see Krishna. You know, they were all in difficult circumstances. And Narada was all alone. And Dhruva had been insulted by his father. And Prahlad, we know what was happening to Prahlad, but they had so much love for Krishna, and they just concentrated on that. So they were actually able to see Krishna this lifetime. Prabhupada also says that seeing isn't just seeing with the eyes. You can also see with what? Does anybody know? You can see with your ears, that's right. Sometimes somebody will be explaining something to you, right? A teacher may explain something to you, and then you might say, oh, now I get it. Now I see. But you don't really mean seeing with your eyes. You mean seeing with your mind, that you understand it. So Dr. Frog, he didn't know anything outside as well. So he couldn't believe what this other frog was telling him. So even though we have acharyas like Srila Prabhupada coming from the spiritual world directly, yes. Okay, thank you for all your participation in class today. So these acharyas coming from the spiritual world directly, and they come to enlighten us, but not everybody takes it. Why do you think that is? Why do some people, they get a book about Krishna and they read it, and they come to the temple and they become devotees, and other people, they don't. Why do you think that is? Anybody have any insight on that? Yes. They like the books, but why do some people like them and some people don't? Yes. Okay, that's a very good point. Sometimes it's like they just don't have, like you said, they're too sinful. But the beautiful part of that is that if they even touch a book, Prabhupada said, if they even touch a book, that their spiritual life begins. And that's why we try to give books to people, and we go out and chant, because Prabhupada says, even if you're in Harinam, and people might go by and go, oh, get a job, or, you know, why are you doing this? You know, why are you chanting? We're doing it to help people, right? Because Prabhupada said, even if someone sees the devotees and think, oh, that's nice, that's the beginning of their spiritual life. Yes. That's right. In fact, there's stories about people who got a book and they put it on their shelf, and then it just sat there for 7 years or 10 years, and then one day They picked up the book, and they read it, and they went straight to the temple and became devotees. Because Prabhupada said these books are like deities. They act. So just by having the books in your home, you know, can purify you, can purify everyone in your home, so someday they'll become a devotee. So we're just planting the seeds. You know, and it's wonderful because Krishna, he can have different relationships with different people. Like, you know, for some people, they serve Krishna, right? So many of us, we serve Krishna. You know, we at our home, at our altar, we bring Krishna water, we bring Krishna prasadam, we change his clothes. For some people, Krishna's their friend. And we talked a little bit, like, what's the name of one of Krishna's friends? Think of anybody who's... Yes. Subal, right. Who else? Anybody else? Krishna's friend, yes.
Sudama.
Yeah, I was thinking of Sudama. What were you going to say? Who? Omaramanga. Okay, good. So what fun, right, to be Krishna's friends. You know, they put each other on each other's shoulders, and they have, you know, water fights, and that's so fun. So, you know, when I grew up, and I'll get to you, okay, I won't forget you. When I grew up, my idea of God was that he was very stern and strict. My mother actually said to me, there's a big clock in hell that goes back and forth, and it says you'll be in here forever. You'll never get out, not ever. So you know what I thought? God's mean. I don't want to go there where he is but then I learned more about God as I grew up. I wanted to know more about it because it just didn't seem right. So there is hell, right? There is a place where people are punished. But is it forever and ever and ever and ever? No, it's not. As soon as somebody has a desire that says, oh God, help me. I want to know about you. I'm sorry for who I am. Then immediately Krishna sends somebody and gives them a book or sends them a devotee to talk to them. So there's Krishna's servant, there's Krishna's friend, yes. Sure.
So, we're all controlled by the three modes of nature, right?
Yes.
So then, why are we punished for doing something, like a sin, if we're controlled by the modes of nature?
Well, it's a good question, but in what... Yeah, he said, if we're all controlled by the modes of nature, and then we commit sins, then why are we punished for doing those sins? So the thing is that, you know, we always have a choice, right? We always have a choice. So in one sense, we've chosen to become under the influence of those modes of nature, you know? And a little bit of faith, just like in the purport from yesterday, the last sentence was something like, one grain of faith is worth tons of hopelessness, was it? A faithlessness. So, now even, you know, Prabhupada was very liberal in his definitions of a devotee too. That, you know, Christians are devotees, and Muslims, if they're following their faith, they can be relieved somewhat, and make a choice whether to follow those modes of material nature. But if someone's totally in the mode of ignorance, you know, let's say they're drinking and they're taking drugs, and then really what can happen is they can be taken over by evilness, you know, by evil spirit, by evil ghost. And they can do things that they wouldn't normally do, but they have no control over themselves. So the short answer to that question is, which is a great question, that we have a little bit of freedom, right? We're not total robots. We have a little bit of independence, whether to do this or do that, a little bit of a sense of what's right and wrong. So even though the material modes are working, we still have a little bit of freedom in terms of making a decision. So just like myself, go ahead.
Well, from a previous lifetime, you get a body, mm-hmm. which is under certain modes of nature.
That's true. Right.
You already made that decision in our past lifetime.
Yeah.
To what kind of body you're going to receive in the next lifetime. And that's why you already made your choice previously.
Right. So like you said, it is. You understand? Does it make sense to you?
Yeah.
Okay. Yes, you read it.
Another example which is kind of helpful is like a car. You're driving a car. A car can go left, it can go right. You can make decisions with it. You can't fly in a car. Right? You can't just decide to start flying. So it's limited because you're under these modes. You have limitations to the vehicle you're in, the body you're in. But you still can make some decisions.
Right. And you can make an ultimate decision, you know, to do with Krishna consciousness is... If it's presented to you, like some devotees, you know, they might have been smoking or taking, you know, intoxication, and they met the devotees and boom, just like that. So that is a combination of Sukriti and the mercy of a pure devotee. So we've got, you can be Krishna's servant, you can be Krishna's friend, you can be Krishna's, even Krishna's lover. Like there's a story of Rukmini. And Rukmini, she was destined to marry Shishupal. Can you imagine? She doesn't want to marry Shishupal. You know, Shishupal is he's kind of a terrible person, very insulting to Krishna. So she writes a letter. Actually, Pushkarpu did a picture, a painting of Rukmini, and she's holding the letter, and she's patiently, not so patiently, waiting for Krishna to appear, because she wrote, "Dear Krishna, you know, I've read about you, I've learned about you for my whole life. I know how beautiful you are, I know how strong you are, I know how knowledgeable you are, I know how renounced you are. You know, I know all your good qualities, and I've already decided you're the only one I'm going to marry. You're the one I want to marry. And if you don't come and rescue me, it's 2 days to my marriage ceremony. If you don't come, then I'm going to have to end my life, because you're the only one for me." And she even tells him, like, "You know, I know you're not going to want to kill too many people, so come when I go to visit the sun god before I'm supposed to get married." So what does Krishna do? He gets on his chariot, and he rides, and he kidnaps Rukmini, and he takes her away, just like, you know, a lion might take the prey away from a lesser animal. So there's so many different ways that we can interact with Krishna. And it's just according to us, you know, how close that we might want to get. You know, it says the pure devotee, he doesn't really want to ask Krishna for anything. And that's because, anybody know why that is? He doesn't want to ask Krishna for anything? What? He doesn't want to bother him. It's kind of like that. Yeah, good. And he also, Krishna, it's also like, he knows that Krishna knows everything. Like, let's say you pray, you know, "I want my friend's very sick, I want my friend to get better." Guess what? Krishna already knows all that. You know, it's still okay to pray for him. But Sudama Brahmana, he was so poor. You know, there's some devotees of Lord Krishna, Lord Chaitanya, that are so poor that you don't know how they could even live. You know, Sudama Brahmana was one of them. And he didn't mind, though, being so poor. He was concerned about his wife, and the wife was concerned. She didn't mind so much for herself, but she was concerned about Sudama. So Sudama Brahmana, what did he do? What did his wife want him to do? Does anybody know? Yes. Yeah. She said, "Go to Krishna. He's your old friend." They were friends when they were in Gurukula, just like you guys. And they used to collect wood together for the spirit, so many things. He said, go see him. But he didn't want to. He didn't want to go and ask Krishna anything. But it's okay, this is the chance for me to go and see my old friends, so I'm going to go. So he went there. Ultimately, he got into the palace. What did Krishna do as soon as he saw his friend Sudama? He hugged him. That's right. And then what did he do? Yeah? Oh, you didn't have your hand up. You're stretching. What else? Yes. He what? I'm sorry, I still didn't hear you. Oh, okay, that came, but he also, yes. Oh, he bathed Krishna's lotus feet. So here's Krishna, the Supreme Person of Godhead, and he's bathing this very poor devotee's feet. So it shows you how much Krishna loves his devotee and how much Krishna loves every one of you. And like you said, before Sudama left, the wife said, Someone wanted to bring him something, so all they had was some chipped rice, the cheapest kind of rice. So he wrapped it up in a little package, and when Sudama got to the palace, he was embarrassed. He was embarrassed. He's in a palace, and it's so opulent with beautiful silks and gem-studded walls, and he's like, he doesn't really want to give it to him, but Krishna, take it. What did you get me, Sudama? He grabs it away, he opens it up, and he takes a little bit of the chipped rice and he eats it, and he's going to take another little bit, and Rukmini, his wife, stops him. She says, no, don't take any more. She said, that little bit of chipped rice has so much love and devotion that it's enough to satisfy the entire universe. So Krishna doesn't care about so much about opulent offerings, although if you're opulent, it's good to give him something opulent. There was another devotee in Lord Chaitanya's pastime. His name was Kolavesha Sridhar. And he used to make cups made of banana leaves. So you can imagine he didn't make a lot of money from that. And Lord Chaitanya would come and tease him, because Lord Chaitanya, he likes to sometimes fight with his devotees or sometimes tease his devotees. You know, he has a lot of different pastimes with his devotees. So he would tease Kolavesha Sridhar, like, you're charging too much for these cups, you know? Give me a better deal. But then one day he went to Kolavesha Sridhar and he said, you know, I want to give you a benediction. Whatever you want, I'll give it to you. What did Kolavesha Sridhar say? What? What? Okay, I'm sorry, I didn't hear you. Kolavesha Sridhar said, I don't want anything except devotion to your lotus feet. That's all I want. And Lord Chaitanya said, but Kolavesha Sridhar, look at your hut. It's got holes in it. You know, the rain's coming through. He's like, that's okay. He said, look at the birds. The birds are in their nest. They don't even have a roof over their head. So I feel really lucky to have a roof at all. And he would not ask for any material benediction. So, you know, I know it myself. I feel like I'm a pretty much a long way from where Kolavesha Sridhar is. But it's nice studying about these great devotees and their devotion to Krishna, because it gives us the impetus, the strength, you know, to be able to at least think about praying that way, right? We can kind of think about it a little bit. So those are some of the things that I wanted to talk about Lord Brahma and about you know, surrendering to Krishna and what that means for us. So in conclusion, what can we do to come closer to Krishna? What are some of the things we can do? We've already mentioned some of them, but just let's do a recap. What are some of the things we can do to increase our love and devotion? Yes? Chant Hare Krishna. All right. Yes? Serve prasadam. That's a great idea. I love serving prasadam. Sunday is a Sunday feast, you know, you help serve. That is so fun. Yes? Eat prasadam. Easy, right? Yes. Read and distribute Prabhupada's books. Yes. Meditate on Krishna. That's right. And it helps when we hear about it, right? Because then we can kind of close our eyes and we can meditate easier. Yes. Cook prasadam. Definitely. All these ways can bring us a little closer. So many opportunities for yes, honey.
Nine qualities of devotional service.
The nine, you want to say what they are?
Hearing, chanting, worshiping.
There's even a little song. Do we know the song? Do they know the song? Hearing, chanting, remembering the lotus feet of the Lord, offering him respectful worship, offering him prayers, becoming his servant, considering him your best friend, and surrendering everything unto him. So thanks for that. They're clapping for you, because that is such a good point of all the different ways there are to serve, you know? And then we think of all the, you know, we think of like Hanuman, the way he served Lord Ram, you know? You know, all the different devotees and the way that they serve, we can take great inspiration from that. And, you know, try to avoiding bad association doesn't mean that we don't talk to non-devotees. We talk to non-devotees and we might talk about our faith. Actually, there was one devotee that said when he's in an elevator, I mean, you can't just start preaching to everybody in an elevator, so he takes out his cell phone and says, Nittai, is that you? You're going to go see Lord Garunga today? Is that correct? Because he figures at least they're hearing the holy name, you know? So the devotee, he hates anybody to go without having something, hearing something, because he wants him to start his path. Like, because you devotees were born as devotees, most of you, or maybe all of you, but even if you became a devotee when you were 3 or 4 or 5, that's all due to your past lives, you know, the pious activities you perform. So we just want to build on that and grow on that and maybe make this our complete last lifetime in this material world, which what a great goal. Is there a better goal than that? What if, you know, would you rather be like Jeff Bezos, who's like a multi-billionaire? Would that be better? I want to hear a more resounding no. No, it wouldn't be better. And the only thing would be better is if you had all that money and you can use it in Krishna service, right? Anyway, I want to thank you for being such an intensive class and so much participation in class. I feel very enlivened by that, and I'm going to remember some of the things that you offered. Thank you so much. So if anybody has any question or comment or something they'd like to add, this is the time. But we've already added a lot, so that might be the end of it. Okay. All right. We'll stop here. Thank you so much. Hare Krishna.